You are listening to the Monday Morning Show, our mix of national news and local features.
So if you've ever traveled Highway 2 between Bemidji and Grand Rapids, you've probably seen a stand in Ball Club. It was operated for over 30 years by the late Tim Holm from Leech Lake, the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. Tim's family, friends, and community continue to mourn his loss, but there's also a loss of culture and tradition that came with Tim selling smoked whitefish and tulabees and wild rice from that stand. Frank Bebo is a member of the White Earth Band of Ojibwe and a lawyer who's involved in a new project, a new partnership for Ball Club. Frank joins us now. Morning, Frank. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
Well, let's start with Tim Holm. Tell us about him and what he did there in Ball Club.
Well, Tim was a longtime friend and cousin, and what he did was two things. He smoked whitefish, and he smoked them in a unique way from a local recipe that people drove many miles to come and get. And the same with the wild rice. He parched wild rice in such a way that seemed one of the closest to hand parch, the traditional methods, but he was still using more of a metal tub with an electric motor turning paddles rather than, you know, people doing it.
So how did what he did there, you know, because for many of us, we may have stopped by that stand, and I know he was a good salesperson. I remember buying whitefish from him, and he sold me on some smoked tulabees. He said I should try those as well. What did that tradition, though, mean to Ball Club there?
Well, I think for, as far as I can tell, for hundreds of years, people have been parching wild rice, collecting wild rice, catching fish and smoking fish right here in Ball Club. You know, in reality, Ball Club is at the confluence of the Leech River and the Mississippi River. And that's an important junction. That may be one of the most important junctions, maybe all the way down to Sandy Lake. You could say the Prairie River might be one of them. It's a small river. But really, when the Leech and the Mississippi come together, that was the fork in the road. That was the junction. And so, in reality, to me, Ball Club was losing one of its most significant ties to the culture and tradition, where we could go out and harvest wild rice, and we could come back and work with Tim, either make a deal or pay him to, you know, do the wild rice or whatever. But everybody in Ball Club had a role in collecting and processing wild rice. And when Tim died, you know, really that business as well as the smoked whitefish kind of died.
Tell me, I express my ignorance, but when you talk about parching wild rice, is that the matter of preparing it for cooking, or is that cooking it?
Parching is where you dehydrate the kernels in such a way that the hulls on the outside become paper thin, and the kernel gets dehydrated to about, I'll say, 8 or 9% moisture so that you can store it for a long time, and that would be the stage essentially before cooking. Once you parch it and you make the hulls paper thin like that, then you go through a thrashing process where normally you'd have like a small person in a hole or a kettle that was lined with leather, and then a person would have moccasins on them. By rubbing these kernels against each other, it would rub off that really thin hull, the chaff, and then you would do fanning or winnowing with a little basket, where the wind would cause all the light stuff to blow away, and at the end you would just have wild rice left.
Hmm. We're talking with Frank Bebo this morning about Ball Club and something new that's going on there. First of all, tell us about the partnership, who you're working with, and what's going on.
Well, I'm working with Boys and Girls Club, and it's kind of a new experience for me. My wife and I, we didn't have any children, so we didn't interact at that level very much. And when I was trying to figure out how to preserve what was going on at Tim's, because I was able to find enough money to acquire the operation, well, then I was trying to figure out how to perpetuate it, because my interest is like everyone else. I like to eat wild rice, and I like to eat smoked whitefish, and I'm willing to pay for it, but I don't want to do all the work to get to it. And I believe that Tim was probably making, I'm going to just guess, $30,000 a year or more, in an operation that for tribal members on reservation is completely tax-free. And that's because we're engaging with our hunt, fish, and gather activities to earn a modest living. And so in a way, Tim was also a hero of mine, because he didn't have to plug in that much to the mainstream system, because the way that he encountered the economy was by people passing by on the reservation buying products that he had prepared himself as a tribal member. And so there's no federal tax, there's no state tax, there's nothing to it. And I believe that if people understand more about learning to earn and understand how and when we are and aren't taxed as well, we can help ourselves become more economically independent and understand when to engage in the economy in certain ways.
So tell us about, so it's the Boys and Girls Club. You're also working with the White Earth.
Honor the Earth.
Honor the Earth, that's right. And the Blandin Foundation. And you did mention this idea, this learn to earn. What do you hope young people learn from this?
Well, I'm hoping that they realize there's a way to make money by, even if you feel, and I'll just use the word stranded in ball club. I grew up outside Washington, D.C., and I'm glad to be right where I'm at and away from all that hustle and bustle and everything. But when you're a young person, you know, it's not easy to understand how to engage in the economy. If you have a place that is available for crafts to be continuously worked on or market, besides wild rice and smoked whitefish, I would hope that young people who are doing beadwork or other kinds of crafts, they also could market their product right there, or they could market each other's products. You know, we're using Facebook right now, you know, just using a little Facebook page, which I'm not even familiar with myself as far as a social media, because I normally don't use Facebook. But we're using that. Other kids could use that because it's free. They could be selling each other's products and making a profit just by selling somebody else's product and help that other person make some money and move their products along. There's a different way to engage in the economy where people want to participate with Boys and Girls Club. They want to participate with real, authentic Indian crafts, and they want to know about healthy food. You know, one of the end goals that I have is I would like to make it so that we have a food locker in Ball Club where people can go out, and I'll just say tribal members at this point, and they catch fish, they catch rabbit, they catch duck or shoot duck or deer or whatever, and they bring it there, and we have some kind of a co-op where they can check in that food for a certain value, and other people who aren't able to go out and hunt and gather can check out that food or purchase that food or acquire that food so that we all have a healthy diet and we're engaged in healthy activities. And if I can make it go a step further, I would make it go into the elderly nutrition program where everybody, whether they're Indian or non-Indian, would get some fresh fish or some fresh deer once in a while, maybe once a week or something, because none of us are getting fresh food anymore.
Let me ask you, we're talking about wild rice, we're talking about whitefish and the beadwork. How, I mean, those are products that I appreciate, but how does that connect to the culture, to the Ojibwe way? Does it go deeper? I mean, does it almost speak to the heart of being Ojibwe?
Well, certainly it's a product or a craft or a skill that's passed on. It may be one of the most portable skills where you can keep most of the tools and things. And so you can learn to bead and you can maybe keep everything in a backpack. That's the reason that I'm looking at this Ball Club Living Cultural Resource Center, because a lot of times people don't even have a garage anymore. People don't know how to repair mechanical tools and instruments or motors anymore, and they don't know where to get it done. And so if you have a place where you can keep things safe throughout the year, whether it's the canoes or the harvesting sticks or the poles that you pull the canoe with, or maybe the evaporators for the maple syrup or the pails or the hose, to where the following year all of those same tools are available, then people can go out and engage in the activity. But oftentimes, you know, I find that right before ricing season, there's people out buying canoes, and then after ricing season, they sell their canoe. And they're not sure they're going to engage in the following year. And so if you're going to have a stable economy, you also have to have stable resources and you have to have stable tools and a stable, you know, if you want to call it a workforce or a group of people who are interested in getting ahead.
Frank, where are you at in the process of Ball Club Living Cultural Resource Center?
Well, we processed, and I set aside about 1,000 pounds of wild rice. like Tim would process. And we're selling it right now on that Facebook page, Homemade Wild Rice, H-O-L-M for Tim's last name, for Homemade. And we're selling it for $15 a pound, and $5 a pound goes to Boys and Girls Club so they can use it for other activities or further engaging and learn to earn or reinvesting in wild rice. The person who I originally dealt with, who was the CEO for Leech Lake Area Boys and Girls Club, Gil, worked in L.A. for a long time, and they had started doing rooftop gardening with lettuce, and they had taken over the lettuce, the fresh lettuce market in most of the grocery stores in L.A. at one point as the Boys and Girls Club. So he instantly saw that there was a way for people to make money where they are. You don't have to have a car to get to Deer River or Grand Rapids and all those other amenities. There's additional ways. And so with Boys and Girls Club, the building that I'm starting right now is 24 by 36. It's mostly shelled in. I need to get it closed up. I don't know if I'll get it heated yet this winter or not. But what I'm trying to ultimately create is a facility for other people to come and do the kinds of things they would like to. There's a lot of people who have programming, cultural programming, traditional crafts, and different things. They would like to bring instructors and things to Ball Club, people who would like to maybe work on, say, a quilt, and leave the quilt out for the week or two or three that they're working on it instead of putting it away and bringing it back a couple days later to the next time they have a chance to work on it. A lot of times, just having a space large enough to gather and work on projects and having tools can be the simple barriers to actually being productive and making a small living.
Well, Frank, we wish you the best, and we'll stay connected and hear more as the Ball Club Living Cultural Resource Center comes to fruition. We do have a link on our Facebook page right now to Homemade Wild Rice, Ball Club Chippewa Wild Rice, and it's good to talk to you, and I bet Tim would love this.
Yeah. His whole family loves this.
Good. Good, good.
Thank you.
Thanks, Frank.
Good work.
Thank you, Michael.
Yep.
Thank you, Heidi.
You're welcome. You can give us your feedback. What does wild rice, the food of the land of northern Minnesota, mean to you? Email comments at kaxc.org. It is the Monday Morning Show.